Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
Hello, this is a message from Terry and Rona, who are Archers and Dumpty Dum fans from Guernsey. Recently on our holiday at Pyramid Lake in Jasper, we recorded this for you.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the atmospheric medieval barn that is Robert Wilson, and with me I have the smelly scout hut that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Linda's stage set, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum was sent in by Kerry and Rona. Lucy, if any of our other listeners want to send in a Dumpty Dum or become a caller-innerer, how can they do that?
If you would like to leave us your thoughts or a plot prediction, sing us a Dumpty Dum, or describe a rival firm as disreputable and then recommend them, leave us a message on SpeakPipe via dumptydum.com or call us on 0203 031 3105. This week, we need to thank Shambridge for her amazing voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Cosmo for his episode roundups. And thank you, Derek, the loan of the back bedroom. Derek is very excited about board game night at the Tea Rooms. Auntie Cardboard won't play with him anymore after he kept setting off her hungry hippo, which he wouldn't have minded, but they were playing Kaplunk.
On this week's show, we have calls from Vicky, Eleanor, Witherspoon, Red Agnes and Eulalia. But first, let's brace ourselves for Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
This week in Ambridge was all about games. Hannah playing nasty ones, Emma forcing people to play boring ones, and Jolene getting overly competitive at everyone's. But there was a bright spot. Thank God Johnny found out that Hannah and Tom were playing Hide the Chipolata. Hopefully that means no more zippy noises or really irritating sodden pretend arguments. I don't care if they are shagging or arguing, as long as I don't have to hear it. Elizabeth has now completely lost whatever tenuous grip she had on the plot. Poor old Anna Toboggan has now been roped in, courtesy of her mother interfering alongside Hootie. No, of course she won't mind you ringing her on her personal mobile number on a Sunday afternoon about work, said Carol brightly. I have news, Carol. She will. Oh, you have a hopeless case with no money in it and a whole lot of ball ache. That sounds exactly the kind of thing my daughter would like to help with. I'm always forcing her to help out people she doesn't know. She loves it. She'll only be sitting at her desk messing about on her laptop. In fact, while she's at it, she could probably sort out why your email font has gone big and green and how you've managed to get the font set permanently on caps lock Comic Sans. Anyway, Anna Toboggan tried to make it clear to Elizabeth that no, Freddie had absolutely zero chance of getting off. No, niet, nine, she said, brushing crumbs off her Freddie Pargeter Bang to Rights t-shirt. So you're optimistic about his chances then, said Elizabeth, grinning manically. No, said Anna. Only the most disreputable. Oh, they sound good. I'll have them, said Elizabeth. Batshit and no way. Solicitors, Felpersham. No cause too hopeless for the right money. Len's hens, Powell's fowls, Dickens chickens, whoever owned them, Josh, who this week was nice Josh, took Hootie to see some squawkies. She was still convinced she didn't want any more chickens, so they bought her loads and built her a house to put them in. So in the end, she said, oh, for crying out loud, all right, then I'll have them. Hootie won't have them for long, though, as she has declared darkly that Newcastle disease is on the rampage. That is apparently when all the chickens eat kebabs and don't wear enough feathers when going out in the evening. Now, Apple Day. We have an apple day where I live, and it is largely focused around cake and booze, which is why it is successful. You drink mulled cider and then pay a pound to try unsuccessfully to throw something at another thing, miss it by miles, then have a bit of cake and go home. There is none of this peeling apples nonsense. Understandably, the only person there was Jazza, who talked to Emma while she tried to persuade him to play pin the bacteria on the kefir, while chuntering on about how awful Hannah is. She's bossy and she causes arguments and shags inappropriate family members and everyone knows that's my job, she shouted. Well, we were nearly right about the flipping Christmas show, The Canterbury Tales. Not a rap version, though. Where a group of unlikely characters speak incomprehensible lines about... Oh, no, actually, it is sounding quite familiar now, isn't it? Linda went to see David. What about my flaming torches, she said. What about my sodding barn, he said. Now, the scriptwriters have given in and told us what the flipping show is. The writers are now being coy about the parts. Honestly, by the sound of it, it's going to be like Ben-Hur. There's thousands of the buggers. Robert, Linda and Monty cosily sat around the fire in the shepherd's hut chatting about the casting. Oh, there's a nip in the air, said Linda. Yes, put it away, said Robert. It looks cold. Pat was playing her own game, hide the goats. Oh, is this where you've put them now, said Helen. Isn't the air in cupboard going to be a bit warm? I tried putting them in the orchard, but they started eating apples and having a nice time, said Pat. So obviously I had to put a stop to that. As if the tea room couldn't get any more hellish, it's now hosting board games. Oh, good. Jolene has been banned as she gets overexcited. Of course she does. Jolene is the original community chest. Johnny had a heart-to-heart with Pat about his horrible experience. I had to queue for everything, Gran, and prove who I was all the time. I'm never going to Argos again. Adam was trying to get the hinds interested in his lick. Stop it. Brian trailed round after him, complaining about the houses he's looking at. One was a bit pokey, so that was ideal, he said. But he looked over the substation, and with Jenny's current levels of radioactivity, we could cause an electrical surge that would knock out half of Borsetshire. Rex pointed out that it wasn't a great summer for grass. Well, that's because harassment arrested Freddy halfway through it. Talking of harassment, he is starting his sergeant's exam soon. Question, what are the ideal conditions in which to arrest a subject? No. What are the ideal conditions in which to arrest a suspect? Answer, drunk, off shift, and dressed as Jerry Halliwell. And we ended the week with a love triangle. There is one eligible woman in Ambridge. It is, unfortunately, Hannah. As a result, she has now come between Jazza and Tom, which is a horrible image, I've just realised. Poor Jazza was after something with a chance of lasting, he said. Jazza, mate, you may as well stick with a pint of Gold Top. Like Hannah, its origins are uncertain, it's on your doorstep every morning, its top comes off easily, and it makes you feel ill if you have too much of it. But you've got much less chance of it going off the day after. The end.
Very good. Did you spend extra time doing that? It was... I don't know. There was some very good, I don't know. How can I say, like that last one? Is that, do you keep those in your back pocket to pull out? Like there's like things that, I tell you what, we're recording quite early in the morning. I've got a non-coffee hangover. This is going to be a terrible show.
I was going to say, for those of you who think that Robert may be going through some sort of stroke episode, what's actually happening is that he's given up coffee. And I think we can all tell.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Do you know my friend gave up caffeine on the instruction of her friend, who is a natural health nutritionist person.
Yeah,
who basically says eat beans and that's it. And she said, "Oh, you have to give up." And Ali doesn't actually drink that much coffee. She drinks a lot of tea, but she gave up coffee and tea. Mm. And 2 days later, she rang the nutritionist and she said, "I think something awful has happened because the world feels horrible. I think I'm depressed and I just feel like a big raw nerve." And the nurse said, "But that's what life is like without caffeine." And Ali just said, "Well, fuck this then," and immediately made a double espresso and went, "Oh, thank God, I much prefer it a bit blurry."
Oh,
so yes,
but I was drinking about 10 cups a day and I think
God,
I was just
that's
exactly
not good.
It wasn't, you know, and with my nerves, it was, you know, I was constantly
in your
on
state
edge.
Of health. Yes.
Yes. Yes. With, you know, with my funny turns, I just thought I was on holiday and I just thought I've survived with one or two cups a day. Maybe I could try and bring it down to that. So I'm going cold turkey.
Why don't you just have one or two a day then? Like now.
I'll go and I'm put an espresso on.
I'm only kidding. You're fine.
I know.
But sorry. Have you got a cracking headache? Because normally people get huge caffeine withdrawal headache.
It's a kind of a fuggy, pulsing, numb-faced.
Numb-faced? Blimey. Yes.
Well, kind of. Not quite, but you know, it's...
You're not having a stroke, are you? Can you smell toast?
I can often smell cigarettes, even though I haven't been smoking. Does that mean I've got a brain tumour?
Yes.
No, oh, good. At least it's nothing serious. One thing I did notice this week was yet another stupid bloody Archer's business name. Lens Hens.
Lens Hens. I liked Dickens Chickens. I thought I should have gone for that. Or Powell's Fowls, I also thought.
Not Doc's Cox.
No, that's an entirely different shop.
Yeah. In fact, we passed one of those. I was in Suffolk this past week, and there's a big sex shop on the A12.
Really?
Who knew? Yeah, is it the A11? I can't remember. Don't go there. It's just off the M25. And
blimey.
Crikey, who? I don't know. It's a bit. I mean, I've never been in a sex shop.
I haven't either, actually.
No. Maybe
I did. Amsterdam does make me laugh when you're there and you walk past some lovely artisanal bakery, and then there's, you know, a beautiful candle shop, and then a homeopath, and then something that's selling vibrators the size of thermos flasks in the window, and you just think, bloody hell, you know, it's just so incredible. But they don't do that kind of squirrel it away into a bad bit. It's just like, it's here it is, let's not make a big fuss about it. And the English are just going, clutching their pearls. But I suppose it's equivalent of just sticking it on the A12, where you drive past and think, was that it was, wasn't it? Oh,
yeah,
okay, right.
It was massive.
Yeah.
The other thing I did notice, and you mentioned it too, is there was another crowbarring of agricultural information, shall we say. And with Newcastle disease being so prevalent on the continent, and I expected it's a good job we're leaving the EU. But that didn't come off.
And everybody Googled those hens that she kept going on about, the Peking hens. They are very cute, but as someone on Twitter said, well, the eggs are going to be this. They're not very good layers. The eggs are going to be the size of marbles. Yeah. And you can't eat the chickens because they're the size of budgies. So what the hell is the point of them?
People keep them as pets. Or they're fox food.
Fox food, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
If Josh gets hold of them, yeah.
Exactly. Number three point I've written down here. Because, you know, Toby and Pip. Didn't I mention several times Toby and Pip, you know, would get back together? And
yeah.
On, this is the first stage. So there we are.
But we need that him to die in a horrible accident, so then she can get together with Rex.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what I think.
All right, and the goats turned up again.
And they, I know. Oh, hello, you're back. Where have you been?
Think they listen to the show?
I know.
Because we mentioned the goats a few weeks ago. Where are the bloody goats? There are goats. An insert. Was it an obvious insert?
Helen goes, oh, that's where you put them. As if, you know.
As if she didn't know.
They've been ambling around the farm, you know. It's like, where the hell are those goats? Like, not only are we wondering where they are, the rest of Bridge Farm are thinking, blimey, they should have turned up by now. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I don't know.
But didn't Apple Day sound dismal? It just sounded like the most worthy, boring, you know. It's because the Grundys weren't involved. Things are only worth going to in Ambridge, I think, when the Grundys have got something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, surely Apple Day should be kind of...
I was going to say, the Cider Club should have been...
Bacchanalian and...
Yeah, but the Cider Club should have been there in force. Nothing.
One would have thought so. Yeah. Why weren't they then? Was there mention of why they weren't? Or was
I don't know. Nobody really talked about Apple Day. Nobody was involved, apart from Emma, who'd got roped into it. That was it.
Okay.
I also want to know why no one ever asks Pat and Tony if they will be involved in the Christmas show. Well, obviously because they're a massive pain in the ass. Well, Pat is. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Mm. It'd be too worthy, even for... I don't know. They don't, do they? Oh, you've set me thinking now.
Never do.
Well, maybe they will be this year's. Yeah. And that's the secret that they're keeping.
Well, as Kerry Warbis said on the Twitters, She said, who is going to watch this thing? Because everyone...
I know.
No one left.
It was, and because they're all silent characters that will be watching it, the audience will be keep completely taciturn. There'll be stony cold silence. Not even allowed to clap if you're a silent character, surely.
I did have a little giggle to myself, though, at the scriptwriters.
Oh, yeah.
Saying it was a cracking script this week, I thought. When Robert said, oh, if only there was a silent party today. Yeah. I thought, yes, hooray, thank you.
Nathan Booth.
Yeah, a little wink to the audience. I love that.
Yeah, that was good.
But the famous character in soap, two characters in soap opera on radio spend 6 minutes choosing between different shades of white paint.
Yeah.
Famous scene. We've now got Robert and Linda looking at a cast list without saying anybody's names.
Oh, that's a particular tour de force, getting those people involved.
So what do you think of my choice for number three? Well, are they just so big names? Why, you know, oh God, it's not like the National Lottery. We can do without suspense. We don't need suspense all the time. We're listening anyway. You've got us, right? We're here. Relax, for crying out loud. No one's going to tune in, gagging to find out who's going to play the bloody summoner. Oh God.
I don't know much about Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. I did go to see a version. I think it must have been The Wife of Bath, although I can't remember. I was about 17, and it was it was in Middle English, and everyone was in a habit, and they were speaking funny. But surely they're not going to do the whole thing in Middle English, are they?
Oh, I don't know. They might as well, because we're not going to listen. and as Kerry pointed out, no one's going to be there to watch either. So there we go.
Yeah, fine. Quite.
It'll basically be all the villagers wandering around in Hessian talking to themselves.
Exactly.
while burning it down by accident. I did Middle English at university.
Oh.
In my first
year. You weren't that long ago, did you?
Well, yeah. It was contemporary literature then. It was good. We did do a great deal about the Canterbury Tales and all the funny pronunciations and all that. And it came up in our English literature in my degree as well, I think. So although it did bring back some fairly interesting memories, I do remember thinking, oh, I would not pay to go and see that. In fact, I would pay to get out.
Not
of
see it.
That. Yeah.
Isn't it quite long as well?
It's difficult enough to make it engaging with professional actors. Yes.
I reckon Linda's going to write it to fit the characters, the actors, the people that she's getting to play the characters.
So Justin will be the merchant.
Mm-hmm.
Alan will be the summoner, maybe. The wife of Bath is either going to be Lillian or Jolene.
Yeah.
Who else? Who are the others? The Miller's Tale. I can't remember anything about The Miller's Tale.
Kirsty Miller, maybe?
Oh, that's inspired, Robert. Ooh.
Well, that's why I'm here, you see. We will find out. We will find out. And actually, there's more later from a caller in.
Try and bait your breath, chaps, and control your excitement about the unveiling of the sodding past.
Ugh. Pop a Mogadon if you must.
But who's going to go and see it? I mean, apart from the fact there isn't anyone left, but who would go and see that as a Christmas? Oh, God.
No one.
Unless it was in Camden, then yes. But, you know, it's not. It's in Borchester. And all they want is, whoops, there go my bloomers. And, you know, it's behind you and all that. They want men dressed up funny as women. That's what they want. They don't want someone as, unless she's going to do it where all the men are women or something.
Well, that could work.
Yeah.
We will find. All will be revealed.
Yeah.
Sometime just before Christmas. If you can stand it. Shall we have a couple of caller inners?
Yes.
In fact, three or four of them.
Hmm.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First up is Vicky Cole.
Hello, everyone. It's Vicky Cole here. I wanted to say a particularly good podcast last week. I really enjoyed it, so thank you very much for that. I wish it was the sound of the Indian Ocean that you could hear on my recording. I think it must have been the ceiling fan. Have to have the fan on, otherwise it's so hot. I find I have about 2 minutes before the sweat starts trickling down my back and into the nether regions. So, yeah, probably the fan. And I don't know if I've got it on now, so you probably can hear it again. It was a sort of mixed week in Ambridge, wasn't it? The first half of the week, so funny with Linda and the show. And the conversation between David and Linda just made me laugh out loud with the sort of rising panic as David just couldn't think of any way to fend her off. I absolutely loved that. Chaucer. I didn't do Chaucer at school. I don't know very much about it. So I don't know if anyone can recommend a good sort of cheat's guide to Chaucer. I do usually try and make sure I know what's going on with the production. So I watched Calendar Girls again, and I watched the very old film of Blythe Spirit. And it does, I'm sure it makes us appreciate it more. So if anyone can recommend a good Idiot's Guide to Chaucer, that would be great. Lovely young men. Josh is well known to be a selfish idiot, except this week he wasn't. He was nice to his granny, wasn't he, with the chickens and everything. That was quite touching. And Johnny is just an absolute sweetheart. I felt very sorry for him being sort of attacked by Elizabeth with all those questions, but of course it's understandable. And then the sort of second half of the week, it got quite dark and upsetting, didn't it? Elizabeth getting increasingly unbalanced, which again, it's understandable, but it's horrible to listen to. And Lower Loxley in trouble, perhaps. It's not nice listening at the moment. And I did feel sorry for Jazza as well. Okay, love to everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, yeah, not enough coffee. Sorry. Oh, God. I'm going to have to give this up as a bad show, aren't I? And just have a big Nespresso or something. I guess the point to take out of that, I mean, I guess you what are those Cliff Notes things? You could buy a Cliff Notes book.
The revision guides, yeah.
Yeah. For the Canterbury Tales. And you'll be able to gen up on it and know exactly what's going on, which will be more than 95% of the audience.
And indeed the cast.
Yeah.
I agree with you completely, Vicky, about Johnny. He seems to have more empathy and understanding and perception in his little finger than the rest of Ambridge, really, has all put together. He identified something was wrong with Elizabeth. He took steps to fix it. He
made it worse.
Yeah. He didn't make it worse. Well, because what she was imagining was probably worse. She was never going to swallow the fact, oh, yes, it's fine, it's fine.
Loving it.
Considering it's fine. Yeah, exactly. Who was it who said if you've survived
public school?
Yeah. Was it? Oh, God. I can't remember who it was. If you've survived English public
Jonathan
school.
Jonathan Aitken, probably, because he's done both.
Yeah. And Geoffrey Arch. Yeah. Although Geoffrey Arch probably went to a comprehensive and just told everyone it was Harrow.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, if you've survived the English public school system, then you fit in extremely well in prison. He identified that how he'd handled Elizabeth the first time wasn't right, didn't sit well with him, and so he went to talk to Pat about it and then fixed it, went back again and said, I wanted to talk to you. He's very sort of brave and he's got a great deal of integrity, which he definitely doesn't get from his mother. So, you know, I don't know where that comes from, but he's a lovely chap, Johnny. It was very, very sweet. And, you know, it's awful to see Elizabeth disintegrating along with Lower Loxley, but she really needs to, focus now. She's, you know, if this is the end, then this is the end, and of the struggle for Freddie. So now she's just got to get back on it again, because she's not going to do him any good if he comes out and the entire business has gone kaput.
Yeah, exactly. And he's a month in now. He's only got another five to go.
Exactly.
He'll be out for Easter. She should be Easter egg shopping for him now, rather than. Yeah, it is difficult. What?
I have an email from John Walsh, rather philosophical one, which I thought was very interesting. And it sort of goes along with what we're talking about with Johnny. Oh. He says, I often think that storylines appear in two instances, one a major storyline and the other one to support or explain it. For example, Linda's stolen llama storyline was provided to explain why Harrison couldn't just ignore Freddie's dealing. Similarly, Lee, the karate teacher, complete self-control and mindfulness, is opposed to Hannah, who behaves in a complimentary way. However, if Lily is brought back to help her mother, which seems feasible, presumably Russ will appear. Is Russ balanced against Josh? Josh makes money by rejecting the love of the land, which is why his father dislikes him, and making money by exploiting the land, i.e. dealing in machinery. Russ makes money by exploiting Lily, whose mother cheated the natural class order by converting aristocratic Pudge to holdings into commercial opportunities. John the Third, John from Ladprow until this weekend when I become John from Hanoi. There's another one who's being chased by Interpol. I like that idea. And I think you're absolutely right, John, about the supportive storyline that goes along the same lines that you can, you know, it's like an English A-level compare and contrast, isn't it? Right on one side of the line. Johnny sort of contrasted with Jazza, maybe. So Jazza is just, he's got flown completely off the deep end about Hannah, has gone for Tom. Right, that's it. I'm not, no thought at all about actually this isn't Tom's fault. Hannah offered the situation. And in that situation, there's no way Jazza would have said no, you know. And then contrasting that with Johnny's sort of thoughtfulness and taking his time about things and going away and thinking about it and then thinking, no, actually, I can do something about this and I'm going to go back and readdress it and look at it. And, you know, very thoughtful chap.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed that, but not only just the compare and contrast, but often you get mirroring storylines as well that kind of amplify, which is not quite the same as that. And I'm struggling to think of an example. So why did I mention it? It's the script and the storyline is far more complex and sophisticated than you might imagine at first glance.
I think we had the Aldridges sort of imploding, didn't we?
Mm, yeah.
And then contrasting with the Grundys all pulling together and fixing everything together and being able to live together and all the generations fitting in and helping each other out and everything. And that was kind of ran alongside the Aldridges all sort of struggling for power and money and inheritance and everything else.
Yeah. Interesting. It makes it sound very Shakespearean.
Well, it is, isn't it? It's all dynastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Shall we have a word from Eleanor now?
Hi, Dumpty Dum. This is Eleanor in Brighton. I am Ms_Eleanor on the Twitters, and I am a first-time caller-in-er. I'm a librarian, and I think Amber could benefit greatly from a little public library because nobody seems to read. Obviously, apart from Jim and Robert and Linda, they read, but they weaponise their reading to score points off each other and make others feel inferior. In terms of my vintage, I suppose it's about 2005-06 when Helen knocked down either Neil or Moik. I can't remember which one it was because they're fairly interchangeable in my mind. And then Tom took the rap for it. So I think that's all the housekeeping, down to business. I know a lot of people are going to be talking about Rory and Ben this week, and I would just like to say that I knew that Rory would turn out to be an arrogant little fuckwit. I tweeted my prediction a good, probably over a year ago, before all the hoo-ha with Freddie. I tweeted that I thought that Rory was going to get kicked out of posh school for dealing, come back to Ambridge and start up a drugs cartel with Toby Fairbrother. And I'm actually quite sad that didn't happen, but I'm glad he's back now and he's clearly going to cause some sort of trouble because, frankly, I feel that Brian never really had to pay for his indiscretion with Siobhan. So the chickens are coming home to roost, Brian. Watch out. The other person that I have a problem with is Johnny. Every time he opens his mouth, it just makes me cringe. And I am really hoping that they do something with him soon or just get rid of him, because he is just too good to be true. And I find him incredibly annoying.
So wow. She wants a happy medium character, doesn't she? She doesn't want the arrogant so-and-so that is Rory, or he's proved to be in his one appearance so far.
Yes. Yes, sorry, we can't properly go into that because that's for next week, because that happened on Monday night when they appeared. So
And then Johnny's too good to be true.
Yeah.
Johnny Goody Shoes. Goody Two Shoes or whatever. Well, that's told you, Lucy V. Freeman,
isn't it? Yeah, I know. I'll shut up. I love the idea of weaponized reading, though. That's great.
But I mean, you get that with often people who are music fans weaponize their musical taste.
Yeah, yeah.
And as if any
I like them when they're I like them before they were famous. I like them before anyone knew
I like them before they were good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just. And then they, anyway, I won't get into that.
How many clubbers does it take to change a light bulb?
How many covers?
Clubbers.
I don't know. How many clubbers does it take to change a light bulb?
None, because actually it was much better like it was.
Fair enough. I'm going to have to cough now. Excuse me.
Oh dear.
There we are. I've escaped this terrible cold that's been going around, but I think...
You've got a terrible cough that's going around instead.
Not really. It's just a bit of phlegm, really.
See, the coffee suppresses that.
I think
it's all coming
does.
Out now. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of the side effects of not drinking coffee for 2 days is having catarrh.
Pneumonia. Mm.
Oh, God.
Another email.
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much for ringing in, Eleanor. We love first-time caller-inners.
Yeah.
And also, you sound a lot like Laura Solon, in case anyone has never told you, you do. Quilted Bunny said... This week, Royfield made a statement along the lines of Elizabeth and Lower Loxley having shed loads of cash, unquote. There is no evidence for this. If it was true, the loss of the licence would matter little. It's because they don't that the licence was such a big deal. Why else would Lizzie slog away with the weddings, conferences, deck the halls, etc., etc.? Freddie is not a poor little rich kid. Okay, Lizzie isn't in danger of having to apply for Universal Credit, but rich they ain't. Yes, I think that's very true, because she sold off some of the... They were talking about turning some of it into a conference centre or building something, weren't they? So they're obviously not minted. I think it's more of the job for life stuff. Freddie is never going to have to, rely on a CV, because he's always going to have, she'll always be able to find something for him to do, even if it isn't, massively well paid or something. Mm.
They won't be cash rich, as in they won't have lots in the savings. They'll be probably a little bit in the business account, because there has to be, because you've got turnover and then you've got wages to pay and all kinds of other things. And, of course, they're capital rich, as in they've got lots of land and buildings.
Mm.
But they can't really sell that, can they?
No. And also the upkeep of that is an absolute bloody fortune.
I know. Mm. It's for old buildings take an awful lot of upkeep and an awful lot of dusting too.
Yeah, it's quite interesting actually. In PG Woodhouse, sorry to bring it back to PG Woodhouse again, but they are every apart from the old in the sort of Lucy, concentrate. I am concentrating. I'm just trying hard to formulate what I'm going on about.
That's all right.
The older generation, like Bertie's aunts and uncles and everything, their homes, their stately homes that they live in, are all completely fine and they love them and everything. But the younger generation are desperately trying to get shot of their big houses.
Yeah.
A lot of the plots are all about trying to flog off some, ghastly, great big, hammer house of horror that you've inherited, that you're having to pay massive tax on, property tax. And it's quite interesting that the new generation are just seeing this kind of, this is sort of, before the First World War stuff, that they're seeing these houses as a massive hindrance rather than anything beneficial.
Yeah, it's a common complaint, isn't it? That this kind of owning this kind of property is not only you have a duty, but it's quite a burden as well, isn't it?
I mean, although it is difficult to feel sympathy.
Yeah.
When obviously half the country's living in rented accommodation or, you know, hasn't got a house or whatever. Not the house they would like. That someone's got, you know, 48 bedrooms and, you know, can't heat them. And you sort of think, really? Is there not a simple way we could go about addressing both these issues? But, you know, life isn't that simple.
No, sadly not. Sadly not. Witherspoon now.
Greetings, Lucy Royfield, Millie Bell, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dumbers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. If this podcast is going out live on Halloween, then it's my 60th birthday.
Hurrah!
I wonder if anyone from Ambridge is going to pop around without calling or texting first with birthday card in hand. Okay, on to business. It was the week of Linda in Search of the Perfect Wife of Bath and other Canterbury characters, Elizabeth slowly falling to pieces, and Jill and Josh bonding over chickens. Didn't they used to bond over bees? But I'm a little worried about Johnny. First, there was a small incident last Sunday when he was playing Pin This Maggot on the Apple, or whatever the heck that game was. I gather he did rather poorly at it and wanted to post a photo on Instagram to show the world how inept he was. He does always seem to want to bathe in his inadequacies, and yeah. I think we haven't seen the last of this issue. That day, Johnny went from the Apple Festival to catching Tom and Hannah in the act. I do wish we actually heard him coming in on the moment of in flagrante delicto, as Jim would say. Later in the week, Johnny betrayed the confidences of first Tom and Hannah. I forget whether they actually swore him to secrecy, but I imagine they would have. And then of his once again best mate, Freddie. As a result, he got Jazzer all riled up and submarined his and Tom's friendship, and then upset Lizzie even more. He did what Freddie expressly asked him not to do. He easily could have sugarcoated Freddie's experiences in jail and not gotten all Hamlet-esque on us. Should I tell her or shouldn't I tell her? Then he goes and recounts the worst possible interpretation of life behind bars. Lizzie was worried anyway, but now she's really, really worried. Johnny did her no favors, so remind me not to tell Johnny any of my secrets. Talk to you all soon.
Well, there you are.
I didn't think he did make it that much worse, really. Because she wouldn't, what Pat was saying, I thought was right, which is if your child doesn't tell you what's going on, what you imagine is far worse than what is actually going on most of the time.
Yeah.
And for Johnny to have just, I mean, Elizabeth obviously was completely out of order, sort of harassing him and saying, tell me, so was he more or less happy than he was before? If he wasn't in prison, do you think he would have been happy? You know, it's impossible to answer. Hmm. And Johnny ended up saying, you know, considering he's in prison, he's all right. Which is the most you can, you know, of course, that's it, isn't it? Is the most you can go for. This sort of, because he was oblique, it made it worse for Elizabeth. And then when he actually said, no, he is in a bad way and he has dreams and he wakes up and he remembers where he is and then he's miserable. But that's exactly what Elizabeth would have expected. So there's something kind of quite comforting that you think, well, okay, yeah, no, he's having a terrible time. Fine. That's exactly what I thought he would be having.
There is something to be said for the, at least I know the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Because what you imagine is worse.
Work with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's only another 5 months of feeling miserable. And, you know,
we've all had a miserable 6 months, for God's sake, in our lives.
Yeah. Definitely. We've got another miserable 6 months ahead of us. Probably.
Aww.
Probably another miserable decade. Who knows? Enough of the politics. Yeah. I can see what Witherspoon's saying, but you can't expect someone because Johnny's very is quite an honest person, and he wears his heart on his sleeve. And it would be difficult for him to, as Witherspoon put it, sugarcoat the truth, because the truth is the truth to him, and he has to express it, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. I think for Elizabeth, I can't, you know, I know she winds everybody up and she's incredibly irritating, but trying to imagine what it, I mean, my daughter's just come back from a week away in Rome where she had a lovely time, and I still spent the entire week worrying about whether or not she was eating properly, whether or not she was getting on with the girl she was sharing the room with, whether or not, you know. And she had a mobile phone and could talk to me and would, you know, send me pictures of her looking happy by a fountain, you know. But the idea of her, if she was away for longer than that and then didn't want to see me or talk to me, that would be awful.
Yeah.
And I couldn't imagine how dreadful that would be.
So. And it's about time that we had a storyline that in lots of drama that shows how difficult it is for the loved ones of those that are incarcerated. Yeah. That a lot of people just think it's justice done and you're thrown in the clink and you don't do the time, don't do the crime unless you can do the time, that horrible old cliche. Mm. But it's not only that person that suffers. It's the loved ones that suffer too. And what kind of support do they get?
Yeah.
None. Well, not what I can see. I know it makes me sound like some kind of woolly liberal, and I'm you know, I have certain views on and imprisoning people, and prison doesn't really work for a lot of for a lot of crimes, but it's certainly,
and also it's nice to have lives. It's also nice to have in a soap opera a situation that is shit and unfixable, because a lot of things in life are rubbish and unfixable. And, you know, it's just absolutely awful. It's like, you know, the randomness of illness or whatever. You know, you can't just wave a magic wand and then Anna Tregoran comes along and says, ah, well, there's a loophole here you haven't seen. And then, you know, within 2 days, Freddie's sitting at the kitchen table eating scones. You know, it's not, it's just, this is what life is. It's really hard. And for young people in young offenders institutes, they are awful, terrible places. And, you know, it is awful. It's awful for all of them. But I thought what was ironic was Elizabeth going, and I'm probably going to piss some people off by saying this, but sod it, let's do it anyway. When she said, well, the thing is with Freddie, you see, it's because he hasn't got a father. And I thought, how many of the boys in there haven't got a father?
Yeah.
You know, that's, if that applied, if that was a genuine reason, Fred, Elizabeth, 3/4 of the prisons would be. You know, I'm not suggesting that any bungled, see, here I go. I'm not suggesting that
just because you don't have a father
means it you're inevitably heading for a life of crime. But absent fathers are there is a huge link between absent fathers in certain circumstances and, young offending with boys, in particularly with young boys. And
it's not just because the father's absent. It's because if you are born into poverty, it's less likely that your family will stick together. Mm-hmm. And if your family doesn't stick together, then you will continue to be poor and you will have a poor education and you will more likely suffer from mental illness and you will get in with the wrong crowd and you will end up offending. That's how it works.
Yeah.
But it's not all free will.
No. And Elizabeth's kind of naive assumption that... but surely if people just realised that, you know, if people just realised that Freddie's father's died, you know, that explains everything. And you think, well, no, it doesn't.
It explains some things, but not everything.
No.
No.
And also, if it was a genuine reason, it would be used countless times, and the jail, the Young Offenders Institutes would not be as overflowing as they are.
Hmm. But that's something to do with sentencing anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
We have another email.
Okay. Is prison reform hour done then?
Sorry?
Is prison reform hour done?
Yeah.
Good.
Hour? Was it an hour? Probably was. This is from Claire, who says she's a first-time e-lailer in her. She was going to ring in, but she's hurt her throat, so she can't. Yeah. The first episode of The Archers I listened to was the night that Helen stabbed Rob. Bloody hell.
Crikey.
Which unfortunately makes me a titchy knob, but was also a hell of an introduction to our beloved docudrama. I spent the first few months trying to figure out who on earth everyone was, as they all sounded the same to my untrained ears. To some of us who have trained ears, they still all sound the same. But anyway, Jill was Peggy, Justin was Oliver, and the Grundys all merged into one. However, with the help of BBC Archers site, I was able to read up on all the characters and familiarise myself with their history and storylines. Since I started listening, a lot has happened in my life, including an engagement, a wedding, and various stresses. None of this more so than when my father-in-law suddenly passed away. Oh. In true English style, I got up and got on with the job of looking after my husband and his mum and sister, which was all fine until the stress and trauma of the whole situation came crashing down around my ears about 18 months ago. I was at a very low point, but one thing that cheered me up was having your podcast to listen to every week. You always talk about how Dumpty Dum is a community, and although until now I have not been an active member, I cannot express to you and all the fabulous contributors to this podcast enough how much you have helped me through some very challenging times. You give me something to look forward to each week, and that is a wonderful thing. Oh, last week I had to have a small operation on my abdomen and I'm recovering well, but I'm suffering from a bruised pubis, or as it should now be known in medical terms, a robart. There we go.
Oh,
and she said, I hope I speak for the other listeners when I say you bring joy to us on a weekly basis, and that is a wonderful thing. Isn't that lovely?
It is. Royfield forwarded that unto us both. And I have to say, I did have I had something in my eye. I was reading
it. I couldn't really.
Thank you so much. You've no idea how much that means to every one of us that take part in this show, however small.
This ridiculous charade.
Yes, this ludicrous escapade.
Ooh, escapade, that's good. Yes, I like having an escapade.
You know what? It helps us through our rough times too, and letters like that mean an awful lot. And and the more my pubis is mentioned in public, because you know it has been mentioned in Birmingham Town Hall, apparently, the better.
I love the fact that you've now got it's an entire area named after you. It's not even a condition. It's a whole thing. You and your bruised pubis, you fool.
It's doing very well at the moment, thank you.
Is it? I don't want to know. It's not been ill affected by the lack of caffeine then, your pubis. It's coping, is it?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's been up all night.
Well, normally, because caffeine's a diuretic, you see, so maybe if you drink less caffeine, you won't be up in the night.
Well, that was one of the reasons. I mean, he was...
Oh, were you doing the old man shuffle?
Well, no, not necessarily at night. But
get up. It's no good. I can't sleep through it.
Drink it. If you drink 10 cups of coffee a day and then you go for a couple of pints at the pub and you break the seal, it's known as breaking the seal, and then you're up every 5 minutes. So but that's not the only reason.
Okay.
Not the only reason.
It's never a good thing to give up anything that you're doing too much of, I think, every so often. You just really have to give it up forever, just give it up for a bit.
Yeah. See if I can. Prove it to myself that I'm not totally addicted.
Yeah. Very good.
The only thing you shouldn't give up is the Archers, obviously.
No. Yes.
Quite that right. would be wrong.
Have we got any more calls?
We have. Red Agnes.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
Hello there, Red Agnes from the Northwest here. Can I just say how much I enjoyed the episode with Snot and the mention of Dexter the Pussycat? I've got a pussycat that also does the same thing, so I'm hoping he'll stay out of the room today. Right, here goes. Elizabeth, what a pain in the arse. Her family are so unconscionably dull that it takes Johnny, to spot that she's lost the plot. Don't think so. This week, Linda just played a blinder. New word, gallimaufry. That's nothing to do with Doctor Who. I had to look it up in the dictionary and I couldn't even spell it. Anyway, loved her idea of the accents marking you out as an outsider. In Ambridge, nobody's got a proper accent. There's nothing resembling standard Ambridge-ish. As for Josh, his solution to anything, including disemboweled hens, is to splash the cash and get everybody else to fix up your mess. She probably won't want them, but it won't matter because Josh has already decided that'll be good for his own business. Ruth and David should be pleased that their small holding is not going to support the next Philip Green, because there aren't enough people, there aren't enough jobs to go around in Ambridge anyway, so it's never going to cover them all. And besides, when Pipette Grace Fairbrother Archer's name becomes public, there'll be another disemboweling from Hootie. By the way, don't mess with the Jazzmeister. We all love the Jazzmeister. Don't forget, he's a pig whisperer, so Hannah and Tom need to be really careful of the mad hogs who may turn up in a feeding frenzy and kill the pair of them. Right, plot prediction. Again, going back to Elizabeth, because we can't avoid Elizabeth. This is my prediction. They're looking for a procedural impropriety. Surely the arrest...
And then she was cut off because it took 2 minutes. But surely the arrest... I think
yes.
The arrest, yeah. as mentioned in the opening monologue, could yeah. be... But all you've got to do is be read your rights, haven't you?
Yeah.
And
he was, probably. Yeah. And anyway, that would have been identified by now, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Can I just say, Red Agnes, that in my head, you look exactly like Maxine Peake. Because doesn't she sound like her? Don't you think?
Is that Northwest accent, that kind of...
Yeah, Lancashire? But there's a particular way that she speaks that really yeah. reminds me of Maxine Peake. So in yeah. my head, that's exactly what Red Agnes looks like. I know. Yeah. As she said, you know, Johnny's identified what's going on with Elizabeth, and everyone else seemed, you know, David just seemed to be blithely unaware of the fact that his sister was sort of slowly falling to bits.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think Jill kind of did the wrong thing with the right intentions and sort of said, oh, just jolly her along and tell her it'll all be all right, which they are all doing, except no one's noticing that the business is falling to bits around her ears.
But why? I mean, she's not the only... So the issue with Lower Loxley is that Lizzie would have her eye on everything.
Yeah.
And she isn't, so no one's doing anything.
Yeah.
But you'd think that the team, if it's a good team, they would pull together and do that anyway.
Yeah.
Clearing up litter, which was mentioned.
I think she's doing that really annoying thing. Well, you will know this because you sort of run a team of people. When somebody, you've either got to say, I cannot deal with this. I am going to be off. I'm taking this as some sort of compassionate leave. I'm off for the next 2 weeks. But somebody who's half there is
yeah,
even worse
yeah.
because they think they can do it. And at the time they have every intention of doing the thing that they've said they're going to do. And then you say, did you do it? And they go, oh, shit, no, sorry. Mm. And, you know, it's much worse. Either do all of it or don't do any of it, but don't say you're going to do some of it and then don't.
Yeah, presenteeism.
Yeah, it's like when people say, I'm going off sick, but I will work from home. And you think, no, if you're sick, go home and be at home and don't work. Because then they just start sending you really annoying emails trying to pretend how hard they're working to let you know that, hey, you know, I'm still working, I'm still working. And you think, it's fine, just be ill. But sod off and be ill. Don't do this half and half thing. It's really annoying.
Yeah. So if it all comes clattering down, and because it's already been mentioned that Geraldine is not coping very well.
Mm.
Does that mean that they're going to have to bring someone else in to help Geraldine?
Well, I think she's coping, but she's just...
got too much on.
Yeah, crazily busy. I think Lily has got to come back and take it over. And I think that will coincide with Russ giving her the boot, Lily coming in, deciding that university isn't for her and that she's going to run Lower Loxley instead.
Okay.
Or that she'll defer it and go back to university later because she got 57 billion A-star A-levels or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's possible. Or you could just hire an assistant manager for Geraldine, like a normal place, because
like
you probably would have an assistant.
Because
exactly. When Geraldine's away, it doesn't mean that Lizzie yeah. can do everything.
No.
And it's a huge organisation. You would have a deputy, wouldn't you?
Yes. Yeah.
Kathy, come back.
Kathy, come home. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for. There you are. Topical reference there. 1960s drama. Yeah, I think
it feels like we're hurtling back to the 1960s, to be honest. So it probably is quite topical. Oh, God.
Yes. Right, final caller in a row. It's okay. Eulalia, who's from Romania.
Good morning. This is Eulalia Romilia in Bucharest in Romania. Second time caller in a row. I was going to call in today anyway on Sunday afternoon, as Royfield instructed us to do last week, but I'm doing it quite early on Sunday morning, as we had quite a big earthquake here last night, which woke me up, and I haven't been able to sleep, so I've been catching up on The Archers and thinking about it and reading the forum and so on. Not that big an earthquake, no damage done. However, so much damage done to my ears by listening to The Archers this week. Hannah, her and Tom, her and Jezza. I like that there's a strong, independent, young female in the village, I think, but the scenes, like the prelude to the sex scenes, just, as you can tell, I can't get my words out, revolting. And the main thing I wanted to ask about was Lower Loxido and Lily, and why has no one else in the family thought, maybe we should get Lily back? You know, yeah. Not one of them, when they were having their secret meeting in the broom cupboard or whatever, said, I wonder who could help Elizabeth out of this most. Not Anna Tregaron, who was useless and just, you know, used it to show off about what a good lawyer she was. But no one in the rest of the family said, why don't we get Lily to talk to Elizabeth? Or, I wonder why Lily's buggered off to Manchester and not said or done anything about her brother being in prison. Some of them know what's happened, but some of them don't. So surely they would have brought it up. It's very annoying. I don't believe it. Lily would have come back. And so they're obviously writing her out, which is a real shame because she was just becoming interesting. Anyway, that's my 2 minutes. Bye.
Bye.
Well, she's being written out now. Oh, dear.
Who's being written out?
What? That's what Eulalia said. They're going to write Lily out, and that's why they haven't brought her back.
Oh, no.
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 No, she's probably just got some more work. She's probably got a bit part on Line of Duty, along with along with my favourite, who's now gone.
Anisha.
Anisha.
Come back, Anisha.
Oh, such a lovely voice. Anyway.
She did have a lovely voice. I do think Jazza was bang out of order with Tom, though. Do you?
Yeah, but all is fair in love and war. It's an emotional reaction. You can't...
Yeah.
Men are different from women. We get funny about these things. I mean, you don't hear... Anyway, I won't say that. That was going to be very bad taste. Yes, I'm a changed man. Men... I think men do tackle affairs of the heart slightly differently, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, I suppose. But... I suppose he's just furious, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he can't have a go at Hannah because... Yeah. He likes her.
And Tom's his best mate-ish, so kind of.
Yeah.
Put yourself in that.
Because
he thinks he should have known. You should have known that I had the hots for her. And he knows he didn't, but if it's a best friend or very close to being a best friend, then you feel that they should be able to read your mind.
Yes, yeah.
And you should have known anyway. And it's not rational, is it? It's quite... I mean, it's not rational, it's quite realistic.
Mm.
I had a very similar thing happen to me. And it was, I'd been to New York and I was staying with one of my friends' girlfriends and her cousin.
Yeah.
And I was completely innocent about this. And there was a sofa and there was a bed and my friend, you know, the woman and I slept in the bed together. But when my other friend found out about it, he immediately thought something was going on, and he didn't speak to me for 2 years.
No.
Yeah. I mean, when he eventually we spoke to each other, and he apologized and said, yeah, no, I was just being I can't use the word, but the only word we don't use here. He said, I was being one of those. And I said, look, it's all water under the bridge. It's not worth worrying about.
Yeah.
At least we're talking to each other now. But that was horrible because I knew it was completely innocent, but he was furious with me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if Jazza wants to go around, you know, weeing up women and you know, making them his property, then I suppose he's picked the wrong woman, hasn't he, really?
I don't know if he wants to make them property.
No, but you know, all that kind of, and then just assuming, oh, Tom's taken advantage of her, rather than actually this might be something she's chosen.
Hmm. Well, yeah, she has chosen that. I mean, she suggested it.
Yeah.
But wasn't that after initially Tom suggesting that they go out for a date and then she turned Tom down?
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone thought...
Or she's going to be trouble, that one.
Oh, yes. Well, I might ask her out on a date then.
I was going to say, she's just your type. I think there's... You and Royfield would probably fight over her. I think...
well, there you are. Isn't that life imitating art?
She's caused trouble with Neil. She's caused trouble between Emma and Ed. Mm-hmm. She's caused trouble between Jazza and Tom. She's caused trouble between Tom and Helen, yeah. I think. You know, she likes a triangle and she likes to be in the middle of it.
Oh, my God. There are people like that. I just thought people want life to be as simple as possible.
No, triangle people are really common.
Jesus. I don't know.
You're right.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, why are people like that? I mean, come on. Life's hard enough as it is.
Actually, in my experience, it's usually people who are doing it because that they usually, in my experience anyway, and everyone will go, but it's often only children who are like it because it reminds them of a very familiar situation of growing up.
My mum said this, but Dad said I could do it.
Yeah. And also feeling jealous when, you know, you have mum to yourself and then Dad comes home and mum disappears with Dad and you think, oh, so I've lost then. So you recreate triangles everywhere.
Oh my God. Okay.
Right. I see quite a lot when I do some training work. I see it quite often. You can often spot people that are triangle people. And they'll either say, oh, I'm one of three. And you think, oh, there's a surprise. Or they say, I'm an only child. And you think, oh, okay. And it's, and they like to, they're usually the people that get in between a manager and a manager and a member of staff. Or, you know, there's two managers and they'll kind of set them off against each other and, yeah, stuff like that.
God.
Anyway, when you think of Hannah, you have to think of her as like that Quality Street, the triangle in the Quality Street, the green.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Not the penny toffee that nobody likes.
I like the penny toffee.
Do you?
I do. You can save all yours for me.
Okay. Like well, with the state of my teeth.
You can have all my Hannah triangles.
All right. I've had enough of triangles. I prefer the purple one with the nut in it. I do.
That's a whole other problem, Robert.
Oh, quite possibly.
You're stuck between a triangle and a nut.
Oh, jeez. That is very true. I can name the nut and I can name the triangle. We'll talk off air about this.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Time now for the social media roundup with Millie Bell.
G'day everyone. Now, as most of you know, I am a teacher of secondary students, so I work with teenagers all the time. And we loved this week the storyline with Jill and Josh, and I loved the way that Josh was with his gran. So we thought we'd have a bit of a discussion about that on the Facebook page, because I think that often the teenagers in The Archers are portrayed quite negatively. I mean, that was just my opinion, and I wondered what others thought. And Marie Harris says, I get sick of teenagers in general getting a bad press. I have three children, 22, 20 and 17, and on the whole, their friends have always been kind, polite and thoughtful. Big up the teens. Jean Bell said a great relationship and very natural, even if, as has been suggested elsewhere, Josh sees the chickens as attractive poster gifts for his business. It is win-win all round. Josh responds to pleasant behaviour with the same. When he talks to his dad, he reflects back what he gets. Great insight there, Jean. And Denise Ann Smallwood did say, I'm sorry to be a downer, but Josh seems to do favours for others that will soon benefit him. This is no reflection on teenagers, ours at 15 and 18, but just an observation of Josh's behaviour in the past. And Fiona Siobhan Powell said, I know for my own part that a grandparent-grandchild relationship is precious. A real connection can be established that is sometimes missed in the teen years between parent and child. It made me wonder why, how Jill didn't have that same understanding with Freddie and Lily. Mind you, I've always had time for Josh. I think he's dismissed too often by David and Ruth. And Fiona, I think you're absolutely right. You've got to wonder how Freddie and Lily don't have that relationship with their gran as well. And I think that thread in particular for me demonstrated how much insight our listeners have. We also discussed the fact, well, this was me saying for a largely middle-class, smallish village, Ambridge does seem to have an unusually high percentage of residents who have seen the inside of a prison cell. Or have I completely lost touch with English village life? Well, I can tell you now that looking at the comments, I think I never was in touch with village life. And that's fair enough because I was brought up very close to London and I don't have a lot of experience living in a small village. But Darren Shepherd said, I live in a very similar village and I know of two people and there's loads more people I don't know, which surprised me. And then people started remembering other people that had done time. There was Tom Forrest, as Anne Liddon reminded us. Tom Forrest may be killing the poacher. He got off, though. I'm not sure whether he was remanded in custody. And Gil Jennison said, didn't Nelson Gabriel do time? And I'm sure he did. But Graham Ward said, it's actually still pretty crime-free compared with Albert Square, which, of course, is not a small village, but is a small area. And then Phil Parks said, it depends what kind of village. Robert Brun said, I grew up in a much smaller village than Ambridge and the postmaster shot his wife. For goodness sakes, like, obviously I am completely out of touch, so thank you everyone for bringing me up to speed with that. I'm going to Scotland at Christmas. I'll be much more, I shall be very, very careful while I'm in a small village up in Scotland, I can tell you, and it is a very small village. And then our last discussion of the week was about Lizzie. And John Kelston Merritt said, I wonder what our reaction would be if this was Clary in Liz's situation. And I think he's making the point there that, Clary's not in the same, I guess, class as Lizzie. And would we think differently? So that was interesting and really made some of us think. And Kerry Jane said, for goodness sake, she needs to face up to the fact that Freddie has broken the law, almost killed someone and been caught. He has been punished according to law, and what she needs to be doing is keeping her business going so there's a home for him to come back to and also look into his future. What will he do when he gets out? I'd suggest she needs some sort of counselling, not from her siblings, to help her deal with her feelings. Does anyone remember if she had grief counselling after Nigel died? Maybe if she had, she wouldn't have made such a mess of parenting the kids. Ooh. I'm not a psychiatrist, and maybe Witherspoon could tell me if I'm right or wrong. Well, I think my gut feeling, although let's remember I was very wrong about crime statistics in small villages, but my gut instinct is that, like Australia, counselling and psychological support is not really as popular and utilised as much as it is in America, so I'm guessing not. Nick Mack said, poor Lizzie my ass, she's just avoiding the truth. And Fiona Crawford said, it's sad that she's surrounded by family, but they seem to be oblivious to how she's feeling and her crumbling business since the siblings meeting. What have they actually done to help her? So lots and lots of discussion there. And we also finished up our week with starting to think about whether we've ever pursued an interest, despite the fact that everyone else is telling us not to. thinking of the fact that Lizzie's going ahead with this despite so much counsel reminding her that this is probably not conducive to a good outcome. So another great week. Really loved looking after the Facebook page this week. And, of course, next week you will be in the capable hands of Yokel Bear. And Witherspoon, he drops in from time to time. So if you'd like to get involved with us, then please go onto the Facebook site and look up Dumpty Dum, the Archer's Fan Podcast, and start chatting to us. But until I speak to you next, hooroo.
Thanks, Millie Bell. Lucy, would you like to hit us with some tweets of the week?
Yes.
Marvellous.
Peggy Woolley. I can only presume that Linda Snell performs amazing fellatio. Why else would Robert be so patient with her? Oh, for those of you who are listening with children, fellatio is pasta. Dominic Young. Sounds about right for a session with Tom. Three creaks, then the sigh, the thank you, and the sound of gentle sobbing.
And they're not tweets of the week. What's the tweet of the week going to be like?
Archer's listener. Here I have to do my call on my my middle English. When that April with his surest suitor, the Drochta of Marcher hath pair said to the rooter, will Tristram Hawkshaw give ye Linda the booter? John Reed. Emma had Emma saying, I've been roped in to help with a board games night next week at the tea room. Scrabble, Risk, and that's not my chutney. And tweet of the week is Jam Spangle, who had Anna Tregoran saying, when it comes to reasons for appeal, Elizabeth, you've only got two, Jack and shit, and Jack left town.
Oh dear. Why are our listeners funnier than us?
I don't know. It's depressing, isn't it?
I know. They must have more time on their hands.
I know, they must. Yes. Bastards.
But if you'd like to make us more funny, why not go along to patreon.com/dumptydum and
yes,
become a patron?
The more you send, the funnier we'll get, I promise.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It costs you a couple of quid a show, something like that. And it really does help put towards all the softyware kind of stuff and large gold microphones that Lucy and I use to record the show. My
Andy
earphone
Roberts caffeine
is,
habit.
Yep. Oh yeah, well, I don't my former caffeine habit. I don't know what could I take up instead of caffeine?
Crack.
Okay, fair enough. I need to buy a new crack pipe. So go to Patreon. Can we get away with that? Probably not. Go to patreon.com and become a supporter. We do really appreciate all the help we get.
Yes.
And we do mention you from time to time when we've got a list long enough, and we really, really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203-031-3105. That's 0203-031-3105 to leave a message. You can find us on Twitter at Dumpty Dum. Lucy is Lucy V. Freeman. That's at Lucy V. Freeman. And Royfield is at Royfield on Twitter. And I am at Naked Fingers. And you know what? I should start a new Twitter feed at Bruised Pubis, but I don't know where it's been taken. And that, dear listener, is that. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.